Think Again with Borderlands Cooperative.
Join us for critical conversations about things that matter.
Every Friday at 10 a.m. on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on your dial.
And 3CR Digital, streaming live at 3cr.org.au.
So together, let's think again about important matters affecting us, like economics,
politics,
education,
health,
climate,
and what we can do about it all. Welcome to our 348th episode of Think Again, a programme produced by Borderlands Cooperative, an organisation working for social change since about 28 years. We're broadcasting from the 3CR studio on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. I am Jacques Boulet, and your host today, and Jennifer is having a day off. But I have Aziza Hussein on the line, and Aziza is going to talk about what is happening in Sudan and the effects of this on displaced Sudanese people who have been who are refugees from their own country, mainly also in Egypt. So welcome to the program, Aziza.
Thank you, Jack. Good morning, and I'm pleased to be in your program.
So despite the civil war happening in Sudan since about 2023, 3 years now, meanwhile, with tens of thousands of people massacred and many millions displaced, really in our press, mainstream kind of media, we get any coverage of this in our news programs. So to begin with, Aziza, could you just give us some historical and other background about what's happening in Sudan to help our listeners make sense of it, also a little bit of the longer history, if you want?
Right. Many political forces and players in international and regional politics have tried to shape what is happening in Sudan. The conflict between the Sudanese army and the militia, the former Janjaweed, as they call them in Sudan, that was created by the previous Bashir dictatorship to suppress independent movements in Sudan, in South Sudan and Darfur. The militia in the new post-Bashir government was to be incorporated into the Sudanese armed forces. They entered into a coalition with the Sudanese army, and then the new government, and then they begin the new government of Sudan. In 2023, the Sudanese militia under Hemeti, who is the leader and the vice president, launched a surprise coup attempt against the Sudanese military led by the president Al-Burhan. This dispute was essentially a dispute about who would rule Sudan, was supported by the Emirates, who have continued to finance the militia. Initially, the Sudanese army was heavily outgunned by the militia, who took control over 70% of Sudan, including the capital, Khartoum, of city of 8 million people. Over the past 3 years, the Sudanese army has pushed back the militia to Darfur. The attack on Iran by the USA and Israel has led to support provided to by the Emirates to the militia to be greatly reduced. I have adopted these opinions through reading, listening to interviews with Sudanese intellectuals, politicians, and people also in Khartoum. Millions of people have been displaced from their homes. Tens of thousands have died. Many Sudanese are starving as a result of what is little more than a power struggle by men who refuse to allow the Sudanese people to vote in elections to determine the future of Sudan. Sudan has a history of democratically elected government. The militia attacked the army and then went to attack the citizens in their homes, occupied civilian facilities, expelled people from their homes, violated them, and looted their property. They summoned mercenaries from all over Africa, even as far as from Colombia, who are paid by the Emirates to do their dirty work. So the truth is that the militia attack happened on the government, on the Sudanese people, on sovereignty. And that's what made the war of militia was not a war of overpower in dispute with the government or the political authority existing at the time, but it was war against Sudanese state itself.
Yes, the state becomes
the target.
Thank you for that very, very brief summary, but very complete summary, really. Can you tell us a little bit about your own personal background to put you in that context you just have been painting for us?
Okay. I would start from the beginning. My name is Aziza Hussain. I was born and raised in Khartoum, Sudan, where I completed my all my primary and secondary education. I graduated from the University of Khartoum with the degree of in veterinary science. I work for the Ministry of Animal Resources. It's a government organization. And then for 14 years I worked in that organization. I had the opportunity to travel to Australia, arriving in late 2014. Then for a year, I tried to settle in and consider my future plans in a new country. I became a resident, and then what can I say? I changed my career while I was in Sudan to media, communication media, and I specialized in community radio. By the way, I choose community radio because it plays a vital and significant role in the various regions of Sudan. Many projects in remote or rural areas of Sudan rely on community radio to accomplish their tasks and deliver their message. So when I came to Melbourne in 2014, I looked at the community and how it is like so diversity. And I said, it should be a community radio here in Melbourne. And I Googled, and 3CR just popping. And I went to their office in Fitzroy, the station there.
Where I'm sitting now at the moment.
Yeah. And I applied to do a Sudanese program because and I looked at the map, the program, there wasn't a Sudanese program. I remember Rachel was the manager. Rachel was the one who was responsible for the training and volunteers. And then they accept me as a volunteer for 1 year in CCR so I can learn about how I can make the program, how I can like go through the process in the studio to produce a program.
Oh, good.
And I started my own show for the Sudanese community. It was called Nile Show, and it went for about 7 years.
Mm. So you lived in Egypt for a number of years, didn't you? And I understand that there is a lot of Sudanese people living there as well who fled the civil war. Can you tell us a little bit about the effects of the war on them, on the refugees, Sudanese, and the kinds of effects you have noticed and particularly also probably personally experienced? So whether how they settled, their attitudes, their values, and the way they live.
Actually, I didn't live in.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
In Egypt for years. No, I went to Egypt 2 years ago for the first time.
Okay.
And I spent about 1 month there. So when the war began, Sudanese people migrated to Egypt because it's the closest country to Sudan, of course. So there is a shared history and geography between Sudan and Egypt, and that connects Sudanese to Egyptian people as well. So many Sudanese before war they go to Egypt for just two reasons: either for tourism or for education. So it's natural to Sudanese to go to Egypt. So it's when the war started, many Sudanese migrate to Egypt travel to Egypt. And it's obvious also that Egypt, for the Egyptians, they haven't experienced these numbers of Sudanese. To come to their country.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. Although the Egyptians have experience of another nationalities, like the Syrian people. Yes. So now about 1.2 million Sudanese, by the end of the first year, they left to Egypt. What is the second part of the question? Sorry. What is the second part of the question?
Because you mentioned in a conversation we had before that there's an important change in attitudes and in values when they arrived from Sudan to Egypt, and you were really concerned about what then was happening with people and how they lost their culture and things like that.
Yeah, well, so the Sudanese in their majority are residents of the capital, those who have left to Egypt. The economic situation of the other displaced people varied. Some they got a job, some they couldn't get job in Egypt. Some spent all the money they had managed to take with them when fleeing the war on renting a home or for their families and so on. So this migration was affecting the Sudanese in a way.
And was there also some resistance to it, probably by the Egyptian locals? And
the Egypt population exceeds about 120 million.
Yes,
which means there is enormous pressure on job opportunities and on basic services such as electricity, water, and health care, especially since health insurance is not available to non-Egyptian. This is the general picture of the situation.
Yes,
I have been in Egypt 2 years ago, 1 year after the war began. I saw many Sudanese people, and I can tell you that a portion of the displaced Sudanese managed to settle and stabilize their situation in Egypt after finding housing in reasonably priced residential areas and securing jobs, despite how difficult that and how difficult.
Mm-hmm.
However, what I observed was a change in the behavior and conduct of some groups, especially young people.
Generation,
a large part which is already open to change. Their houses is due to life in Cairo, where there is a great deal of freedom and large, like shopping centers. Same time, these young people have come out of a war with no job and no money sufficient to afford the kind of life those out war signs. They see all around them, but cannot experience themselves. So it is only natural that many forms of misconduct would emerge with material circumstances.
Yeah, yeah. Let's get a bit of a rest and gather our thoughts and listen to Time's Up by Larry Maluma. You're listening to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio on 855 AM on your dial and streaming live at 3cr.org.au. Today I'm talking with Aziza Hussain on our Think Again program, and she's been telling us about a bit about what's happening in Sudan and the profound effect it has, particularly all the mutual warfare, really, the effect that has particularly on young people, particularly also overall on Sudanese refugees who end up in Egypt, who have therefore also fled the civil war. Aziza, before the break, you talked about how people generally living in Egypt have become detached and alienated from their customary values as they try to struggle and adapt to their new realities with very little means and in the ways in which they are living, particularly also being resisted by the locals in Cairo, particularly. As an extension of that, you have also spoken to us previously about the really harmful ways that people are interacting on social media. Can you sort of talk a bit about that? What's going on there, and what is behind it? What have you observed?
Well, many people have talked about the effects of social media on young people and teenagers in a stable country that are not suffering from war. So imagine the impact how could be like the impact on displaced Sudanese youth who are trying to stay strong and move forward in Egypt. Some of them tend to social media, especially the platform TikTok, because it pays its users.
That's right.
Yeah, some use it as a way to make a living by spending long hours live streaming, like discussing like superficial topics, and they just talk about anything. So they just want to stay for hours, and interact with other people who are following them. And sometimes they use 18 plus language to attract more views and consequently earn higher income from TikTok. I also noticed that some well-known faces have tried to use social media to promote advertisement, actors or actresses in Sudan, and then they went to Egypt, they couldn't find work. So also they use the social media to promote advertisements for business owners, and that's okay because they have no job. And there is nothing wrong with that, but they then they need to find a way to make money. However, what caught my attention is that some young women clearly seems to feel compelled to use 18 plus language. So the listeners or the followers, their followers, like put them in this corner. So they continuously want them to talk like that. So and it becomes like just a mess. So and this engagement from their followers like attracts other followers, and it becomes like this is their life. They just detach from their reality.
Yes.
And this is becomes illusion life. And then the competition in this cycle is an imaginary, and we even see accusations on this based on one woman stealing another supporter. So she this one used to support me on TikTok, and now you take it from me, and you have to do this. Different level of anything. It is something that is sadness, and I feel sad about that. And imagine everyone drawn into these closed circles that are of no benefit.
And as well as it probably gives people who follow a little bit of comfort or false security and all of that, and then they actually also start following all manner of things their leader or their influencer or whatever they call them are telling them or letting them know, and they lose a sense of reality. Is that what you're really saying?
Yes, correct.
Okay. So we experienced that here as well. And particularly also when you are already in a discriminated kind of a position or way of living, then that becomes even worse because you start losing sense of reality and of your sense of what you can do about the real world you live in. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly.
Do you have, sort of, because we're approaching the end of our program, do you have any advice to our listeners or suggestions how they can support or advocate for not only the Sudanese people, but for refugees? Because we have that similar problem here in Australia, in Sudan or in other countries. What would you suggest could support particularly young people in those situations?
For the young people, I think it's because they lost the leaders, as mm-hmm. you say. Maybe through creating different platforms and real talk mm-hmm. and discussion and that's the only way, because. I don't recommend to be using the same social media like mm-hmm. TikTok. I noticed some religious leaders mm-hmm. use the TikTok mm-hmm. to talk to these young people.
Okay,
but I think the first way is to take them out this platform because they are good in it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you, as a leader, you go to their tool, mm-hmm. maybe they do not listen.
Mm.
But if you try to get them out of their comfort zone in social media,
mm-hmm.
to talk real talk,
mm-hmm.
and ask what are the problems, and to discuss it and try to. And what can I say? But even if it is just talk, it will stay talk
mm-hmm.
without real chances to find work.
Mm-hmm.
Or,
yeah,
at least it's the first step.
Yeah. But it would also need probably groups or possibilities and opportunities where they can connect with the real world, and that means we need to host society like Australia or in that case Egypt. They need to make available places where that process of learning can happen, and where they can listen to other voices, and where they also can find relational support by locals as well as by their own group. Is that right?
Yes, correct. And it's like in stable countries like mm-hmm, what mm-hmm. happened here.
Yeah.
The government put the rule that 16
mm-hmm,
plus they can use the social media. This is a good step too.
Yeah. We're at the end of our program, Aziza. Thank you so much for coming on the program today. It's been really informative and really something we rarely talk about in as far as Sudan is concerned, but very much familiar in terms of the way in which refugees are being forced to adapt to certain situations and conditions, and that quite often is really leading into the wrong direction, as you just have been sharing with us. So thank you so much for that. And to our listeners, thanks for tuning in to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio. If you would like to send us any comments, please email borderlands@borderlandscooperative.net. Our past programs are available by podcast on a variety of platforms and via the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au. Meanwhile, to finish our program today, please enjoy Milky Mana by King Stingray.
Sit down by the fire, man, I got no receipt to write. what kind of man do you think I am?
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.